Thank you, Ron. And keeping with the theme of introducing people to introduce people to introduce some other people, I'm going to introduce some of my staff that I have here with me. First and foremost, I want to recognize my Deputy Administrator, Therese McMillan, who's in the back. Next to her is Amber Ontiveros, who runs our DBE Title VI programs. Many of you know Amber. One of our new and great additions, she's in her second week on the job, our new deputy head of the Civil Rights Office, Selene Dalton-Cummins. I've got the name right. Many of you know our former head of Civil Rights and now doing a very important function in our planning and environment work in terms of outreach. Cheryl Hershey is here at this table. And also a former FTA staffer who now works in the office of the secretary who does a lot of our outreach activities and the whole secretary's agenda is Bryna Helfer, also in the back. Thanks. So I want to say thank you for having me back. This is an important annual event for us. It really is, because of the focus on equity of this group, an opportunity to really talk about how equity really infuses almost all aspects of Secretary LaHood's strategic plan for the department and how it really infuses our agenda at the Federal Transit Administration. I know you heard from the Deputy Secretary this morning. John is a wonderfully skilled manager of the department with strong backgrounds in a lot of different modes. One of the unique things that he did as head of the Maryland Transportation Administration is that actually has aviation responsibilities and highway responsibilities and transit responsibilities. And that, in like few other people in the country, really gave him the skill set to really set strategic direction for all of us. So, A, thank you for inviting him, but also thank you for recognizing the leadership that he's brought to the department. As I hope he explained to you this morning, I think few things speak to the Obama administration's commitment toward adequate transit service for everyone than our budget proposals. When you look at what President Obama is looking to do, just with our budget, he is proposing a six-year reauthorization plan that would grow transit funding by no less than 119% over the levels in Safety Lou. Just for the coming fiscal year in 2012, he has proposed to more than double the FTA budget. And he's doing that in a budget where he has proposed a discretionary freeze on spending. And even in the context of a freeze and all of the difficult choices that he's had to make in putting that budget together, the Federal Transit Administration is slated to have its budget doubled. We obviously were able to bring that about because of a $50 billion upfront commitment that the president made toward infrastructure investment department-wide. Of that $50 billion that the president committed, $11.5 billion came to the Federal Transit Administration. And we were able to use that money to both augment a whole bunch of initiatives that I'll talk about later in this speech, to really put transit on a priority where it belongs and highlight what the real needs are rather than just talking about milking along current programs at current rates. I frankly think that at a time when America is really taking notice of the fact that we are creeping up to $4 gasoline and in some parts of the country exceeding $4 a gallon gasoline, this is precisely the right message at precisely the right time. Let me talk about a few of the other initiatives that are embedded both in our reauthorization plan and in our strategic plan as a department that I think goes right at the heart of the importance of transit equity. First and foremost is something that I've talked to you about in the past, but it bears repeating, and that is the need for meaningful federal oversight of transit safety. Right now, we have a truly anomalous situation in the law where if you are a commuter rail line that runs between suburbs and center city, you are subject to voluminous oversight, a very thick rule book of regulations that are developed by the Federal Railroad Administration, and hundreds of federal inspectors across the country ensuring the safety of those systems. If you are a rail transit operator in the center city, the SEPTAs, the T's in Boston, the New York City subway, the systems in Miami, MARTA in Atlanta, the safety oversight there is governed by 27 separate, exceedingly small, exceedingly underpowered and under-resourced state safety agencies. For many of those agencies, their overall staffing is less than one full-time person per year. My agency, the Federal Transit Administration, many of you may not know, is prohibited by law from issuing safety regulations on the transit agencies we fund. We, back in December of 2009, the Obama administration forwarded to Congress a comprehensive rail transit safety bill to make sure that there are minimum common sense standards, not just for the protection of passengers, but for the protection of transit workers. When you look at many of the things that we've discovered as far as deficiencies that are improving here at the Washington Metro system, while the crash that that happened on the Red Line and the Washington Metro was tragic, even more tragic was the record of fatalities of transit workers on the Metro system. And when we talk about having minimum common sense federal standards in place, reversing that prohibition and allowing our agency to have transit safety authority on a par with what is given to commuter railroads now, we think it is a core issue of equity. And therefore, the Obama administration, though we were able to get a bill very similar to ours out of the Senate Banking Committee on a unanimous bipartisan vote, Democrats and Republicans acting together, which was a great rarity in the last session. But even there, the issue of transit safety got out of that committee with no dissenting votes. Unfortunately, the bill did not get finalized before the end of the Congress, and the administration will be proposing it again as part of their reauthorization bill. Separately, among the other steps that we've taken that I think addresses head-on the issue of transit equity has been our change in policy as it relates to what types of new transit construction do we really value. This is an issue very much in the regulatory weeds. But prior to the Obama administration coming in, the Bush administration had imposed a rule that basically said that unless a project passed a very narrow cost-effectiveness test, it would not get any federal funds. And those projects, that ruling was the kind of ruling that resulted in the Central Corridor Project in Minneapolis-St. Paul eliminating three stations in the heart of the African-American and Asian-American community in St. Paul. Literally, at that time, that project was going to build the foundations for those stations, but not build the stations themselves to actually serve the public, because the added cost of those stations was going to cause the cost of the project to run afoul of the cost-effectiveness test. We actually, in the Obama administration, reversed that ruling. We're able to play a catalytic role, I think, with the communities in St. Paul to get those three stations built. We're hoping to sign a full funding grant agreement for that project in the next month. And it will be a balanced project that will look out for the entire community. As Ron mentioned, one of the things that we're also most proud of is the Recovery Act itself. Now, we've been about this now for in terms of putting Recovery Act dollars to work. Just about every Recovery Act dollar that was given to the FTA has now been obligated and is creating jobs now as we speak. It's not just creating jobs, but it's preserving a lot of jobs and, importantly, preserving service to the transit dependent. One of the things we're very proud of is a new program was established as part of the Recovery Act called the TIGER program that Secretary LaHood oversees. And 60% of those grants went to economically distressed communities, home to nearly 40% of the nation's population. So you know, my agency, the Federal Transit Administration, was given the opportunity to do 80% growth in a single year through the Recovery Act. Like I said, we're not only creating a lot of jobs, we're preserving a lot of jobs, and importantly, we're preserving a lot of service to the public. So we're very proud of that. Also, as part of our reauthorization proposal going forward, we have finally been able to move to an administration posture that I would say is one characterized by having our eyes wide open on what's going on as it relates to shrinking state and local revenues for transit and what's happening with transit operations with cities across the country. As part of our reauthorization proposal, we are proposing a new mechanism that will allow communities of cities with 200,000 or more to use a portion of their formula funds for direct operating assistance. Our focus really is on preserving service for those that need it most, especially in communities with high unemployment. What we're looking to do is to try and make this a temporary state of affairs. We don't want states and localities to abandon their responsibilities toward funding the transit services they need. But like I said, we have our eyes wide open about what's going on locally. We saw service reductions and cutbacks, even at a time when we were boosting federal funding by 80%. That's precisely the kind of scenario we're trying to avoid. As Secretary LaHood has pointed out, it makes absolutely no sense to buy a system brand new buses when they're simultaneously laying off drivers to drive them. So importantly, we have taken the step of, as an administration, coming forward with a proposal on operating assistance. There are many other competing proposals currently up there in Congress. I feel like with our additional leadership, we're going to get something done this year. And I thank you for your help on that. Importantly, and one of my favorites, and something that sometimes isn't always the sexiest issue to give a speech about, but I'm going to do it anyway, is the state of good repair of our transit systems. Because I truly believe that that is an issue that is central to the equity discussion. There is a very real tension that exists that all transit agencies must provide on when we take scarce funds to extend services to new communities while simultaneously having very real state of good repair deficiencies with the old line system that has been serving peoples of need for decades and who have needs that haven't been addressed for decades. When I first came in, the FTA was doing a study on just the maintenance backlog and state of good repair backlog for the seven largest rail transit operators in the United States. That study took on added importance when it was revealed that among the senators that called and asked for that study was a junior senator from Illinois named Barack Obama. Barack Obama was a senator who obviously rode the systems in Chicago and in Boston and elsewhere. As I'm very fond of saying, it's quite possible that this president took more transit trips in 1 week of his life than all his predecessors did over the entirety of their lives. But at Secretary LaHood's insistence, he was concerned that this study that we did that revealed this $50 billion not only did not look at enough rail operators, but needed to look at all transit operators and a real cross-section of transit operators across the nation. So we did an even further study at Secretary LaHood's direction and found a $78 billion maintenance and state of good repair backlog as an estimate for the backlog at transit agencies across the country. Well, obviously, we're not going to pull ourselves out of a $78 billion hole overnight. But I am pleased to say in a single year, as part of our reauthorization proposal, we are proposing a new state of good repair initiative for our programs for the next 6 years, and importantly, for the coming fiscal year, again, in an environment where there is a funding freeze on domestic discretionary programs, President Obama is proposing that our funding, compared to existing state of good repair funding, grow by over 300% in a single year. It is one of those things that's not It's not just about putting people to work. It's about putting people to work on critically needed investments that have been long overdue, that need to be made, that will improve the quality of life of everybody, but especially regular transit riders. You know, the fact is we talk about the state of good repair because a great many riders don't have a choice. They don't own a car, or they can't afford one, and then they're completely dependent on the transit system to get to work, to shopping, to school, or to daycare. So what does deteriorating transit conditions mean to them? It means risking the loss of a job because they can't get to work on time. It means risking their spot at a daycare center because they can't pick their kid up on time. How many people have paid late fees for picking up their kid late at daycare? Raise your hand. All right. Sometimes those late fees are more than you've paid for like 2 or 3 hours of daycare. And sometimes those late fees have to do with the reliability that the transit system doesn't provide. You know, for some people, a reliable transit system is the difference between seeing their kids at night or not. It's the difference between having dinner as a family or not. It's the difference between actually having the ability to supervise homework or not. You know, when you look at the demographic factors of who are the transit dependent, it's very clear that that the state of good repair of our existing transit systems is an equity issue. Nationally, about 40% of transit riders have incomes of less than $25,000 a year. But in some areas, like Indianapolis, the number is closer to 70%. So in Indy, which I have some experience with, my wife is from Indiana, more than 50% of Indigo riders in Indianapolis are transit dependent. Of those riders, 78% do not have a vehicle available to them. 60% of Indigo riders don't even have a driver's license. In Denver, the RTD is 49% transit dependent. In Atlanta, it's 46%. These are the passengers that have absolutely no choice but to endure whatever service we serve up, clean or dirty, convenient or inconvenient, reliable or unreliable. This is just one of the reasons why Secretary LaHood's strategic goal to address the state of good repair of these systems is reflected in a 300% increase in President Obama's budget. It's the right thing to do. It's not only going to put people to work, like I said, but it's going to put them to work on jobs that have and projects that have been needed for a very long time that are going to make a meaningful impact on that reliability question that burdens the transit dependent. Separate from that, I want to provide a little bit of an update about what's going on in our civil rights function within the FTA. It has been a time of a lot of discussion, a lot of action, and a great deal of work. And I particularly want to credit my deputy administrator, Therese McMillan, who not only headed up a task force within the FTA on civil rights, but is now heading up the very, very challenging job of implementing all those recommendations. How many of you have served on task forces that never really got around to implementing all the recommendations? Don't even need to raise your hand on that one. We're not going to do that. We have taken this issue on very seriously. We've evaluated what needs to be fixed. We've gotten people focused on each one of those tasks. It's a very tall order. We have a lot to improve upon. Among the things that we're talking about continually and working on is speaking with clarity. Speaking with clarity to our grantees and our transit agencies of precisely what is required of them and when it's required. We have the challenge of making sure that our guidance is clear. We're not really interested in having 17 different definitions of compliance. We've had 8 webinars for transit agencies across the country on fare equity analysis, and more webinars are coming and are planned. We provided more written guidance. I've sent out a dear colleague to every transit general manager in America. This is a very dynamic time. Like I said, while we may see increased funding nationally, we see retrenched funding locally and at the state level. There are some very serious service reductions, and in some places service enhancements go on, and what's important is that they know that the Title VI requirements apply to both. So we are also engaging in increased oversight and bringing the resources to bear to do that. I have to say that there's sort of one overarching goal that we have as part of all these efforts to improve our civil rights function, and that is ending the period where the civil rights function is isolated and stovepiped within the FTA. And I think Secretary LaHood is supporting of doing that of a civil rights agenda across all of the DOT. Importantly, we're bringing having our civil rights officers in our regions work on this, but also soliciting and insisting on the help of other folks in other job descriptions to make sure that transit agencies don't have a visit from the FTA just on civil rights and then a visit from the FTA on everything else. It's inefficient, makes no sense. We're trying to align our overall oversight of all FTA functions and integrate civil rights into that. So it's not like FTA is speaking with two voices, the voice of get the grant obligated and get the project built yesterday versus the, oh, and are you compliant with the civil rights rules? Because in the end, what I'm looking for is compliance. I'm really not looking for trophies of enforcement. In the end, what's going to serve the transit riders is compliance, as opposed to enforcement actions. Now, that's going to require some very tough judgment calls. It's going to require some very tough arguments. And I'll tell you right now, this community is not going to agree on every judgment that the FTA makes on every system and every complaint that we get. But importantly, you know that you're being heard. And importantly, you know, all I'm going to ask you to do is remain engaged. Not only engaged in what we do as a compliance and enforcement agency, but engaged in every one of these other issues that I've touched on today. Engaged in the reauthorization of the transportation bill and whether we are going to have a robust funded state of good repair program that makes those investments in the core systems that I've talked about. When I talked about our changing our definition of what is and is not a cost-effective, valuable transit investment, that project, that is going to be subject to a proposed rulemaking on which the public is going to be asked to comment. I implore you to comment. I can assure you that the people who won't like it will comment. So that's just a pitch for participation, not the outcome of the rule. I have to be careful about what I say.
We're going to do Q&A.
Okay. So really, I'm being told that we're going to do Q&A, so that means it's time for me to shut up. I think more than anything else, I just want to say thank you for everything you do. Thank you for the annual opportunity to talk about equity and how it infuses what we do, and thank you for your advocacy on the local level and how that redounds at the national level. Thanks very much.
Okay. We now have time for a few questions. Everyone who's asking a question has about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Secondly, are MPOs going to be required to be proportionately representative to the areas in that they represent?
Those are very good questions, and I don't know how far you got with the Deputy Secretary this morning, but I have to be very careful. This is just one of the responsibilities of this job. We have signaled a lot of what we're looking at doing as part of reauthorization, as part of our budget. We're hoping to have the actual reauthorization text and be able to discuss this in a great deal more detail, but it's going to be a few weeks. So all I could tell you at this point is public participation, workforce development, a number of these issues is very much at the front of our minds, and MPO reform is also at the front of our minds. Where precisely that comes out, you'll have to wait for the details when they come out. Sorry. Ron.
45 seconds, Ron.
In highway construction, we have some guidelines on what's expected in terms of minority participation. on, my understanding is, on if it's on a rail instead of a road, that there's currently no guidance, and so this looks like a tremendous opportunity to do it right and set an example for the highway people. Could you comment on that?
Well, I think, you know, Secretary LaHood has convened a DBE working group, and there's been, I think, more outreach, and I've participated in one of the forums in Hartford. I know that there have been now, I think, four others around the country to try and promote the most robust participation as it relates to construction. I think you may well see some of these issues addressed in reauthorization. But I think importantly, I mean, from our perspective, just within the FTA, we have taken the step to try to work to get a specific DBE, rather than an overall goal for the transit agency, to get a specific DBE participation goal for each of our major New Starts projects. Because we have found that you're much more successful on having a project goal as opposed to letting that major project sort of be subsumed in the overall average of the entire agency. I think also one of the things that we need to discuss head on is DBE fraud. It's a very real problem that our Inspector General and others are appropriately investigating in a number of cases. You could have all the rules and regs and guidance on the street, and if some of those disadvantaged businesses are just serving as a pass-through or a disadvantaged business in name only, then you haven't achieved your goals. So we've been very focused on that as well. Mm-hmm. No, workforce development, you know, I was just meeting with some folks from L.A. this morning, and we've also been pointing to folks in Denver. Well, we're trying to have a robust workforce development initiative as part of reauthorization that really tries to connect the people most in need, especially in those local communities, with the construction opportunities. But again, one also needs to make sure it really goes to what people were talking about before. It's not just about getting a job in transportation, but creating a career in transportation. And I've even, you know, one of the things I really am impressed in terms of what's going to happen with Denver, Denver is currently undergoing a great deal of construction, but they're also training some of those folks who are doing the construction work to then transition into the operations jobs, because we recognize that that construction boom isn't going to last forever.
So okay. Janet, go ahead.
Hello, could you comment, please, on on the status of finding a new way to a new funding mechanism for this transportation bill? Because without money, I don't see how anything happens, and nobody seems to be inclined to increase the gas tax.
Well, you know, we have been saying repeatedly that the administration stands ready to sit down with Congress and find that funding mechanism. One of the things we do know is that, as has been made plainly apparent, the current funding mechanism is not doing the job for current levels of funding. We've now had two general fund transfers to get the highway trust fund, including the mass transit account, fully funded. And we're also, as has also been observed, we can, if not handled correctly, working at cross purposes. One of the, you know, the president has just this past week, especially in the face of $4 a gallon gasoline, been talking about the need to reduce our dependence on oil, and transit is one of those solutions. Well, right now, oil consumption is where we derive the funding, so all these issues need to be looked at together in concert with Congress to something that's enduring and adequate to meet all those needs.
Okay. Laura gets the last question.
So when you're thinking about the reauthorization, I know you guys are working very, very hard on getting your bill together and putting every single thing that we've told you about into it. I know you've been thinking really hard about that, but every single little thing. Because we have so many good ideas.
I think I said something in my speech that you're not going to like every decision we make.
But I also think I would really invite you in, you know, the great leadership that you've shown at FTA to think about Plan B. And what will we do if there's no reauthorization passed this year or next year? And I think that right now, in your power, you have a whole lot of things that you could change in terms of the administrative rules. You've already done that with the equity analysis and with this cost-effectiveness ruling. And I would really invite you to join us in a conversation about Plan B. How can we support you in Plan B? And how can you support us in Plan B?
All I can say to that is the president is committed and the secretary is committed to a six-year reauthorization bill. The reality is, I know what you mean by Plan B, but the reality is there's only so much that can be accomplished in that kind of environment. And I think we would fare far better in terms of getting clarity and buy-in and the authorities we need. I think I know some of what you're talking about in terms of some of those steps that will take in Plan B. We were just having some of those discussions with folks from L.A. this morning who want to do a lot by way of local job training and opportunities as part of Mayor Villaraigosa's investment from the Measure R funds in L.A. A lot of those solutions would be better pursued through legislation, knowing what it would take to change something like the common grant rule across the entire federal government and getting the buy-in from dozens of agencies to do that. So I hear you. Right now, if we're not focused on making Plan A happen aggressively, we have no shot at Plan A. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you.